everyone. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman, and welcome to What Women Must Know. Thank you for joining me. I have another really fascinating show for you today because you know that this program is all about empowering you with truthful information so you can make the most informed decisions possible regarding your health and well-being. I do my best to bring the most inspiring people to these conversations, and it is such a great chance for me to get educated, for you to get educated, to learn what really is at the leading edge, and most importantly, how we can find the best solutions for our health and well-being. So thank you all for joining me, and I just want to remind everyone, especially those that may be listening for the first time, that I have a fantastic website, whatwomenmustknow.com, because I have free articles and special reports available there for you. All you need to do is go to whatwomenmustknow.com, opt in, and you will get not only these special reports, but other articles. Many of the radio shows will be automatically sent to you. Lots of great information. And as well, you can go to my Facebook page, which is What Women Must Know as well, because I post on a daily basis lots of very, you know, chunky, meaty information. I have great articles and studies and relevant pieces of information that are impacting our health, and we need to know about it. So you can go up there to Facebook, up to the website, get educated. That's what it's all about, especially during these times when so much misinformation and propaganda, as I like to call it, is being thrown at us. We need to be able to sift through it all so we really know what will support our well-being. And talking about supporting our well-being, we're going to be having a conversation about a topic that I am just so passionate about. And for my long-time listeners, I'm sure you've heard me talk about the benefit of understanding the message that our genes have to give us, particularly the genomic aspect of our genes. So we are talking today with Dr. Paul Beaver, and he is a leading light in the field of nutrigenomic testing, and he's going to be sharing with us today how to hit the bullseye for your health with nutrigenomics. And just let me introduce Dr. Beaver for one moment. So Dr. Paul Beaver is a co-founder and chief scientific officer of FitGenes Limited, an international provider of genome-based personalized preventative healthcare and wellness services. For the past 20 years, Paul has been developing personalized health solutions for maximizing health potential based on the scientific and medical research in the field, such as nutrigenetics and nutrigenomics. During this time, Paul has worked with many healthcare professionals in Australia and internationally towards improving the health and wellness outcomes of clients based on genome-based healthcare. This commitment means Paul has developed expertise in the scientific field of nutrigenomics, and which is the study of the interaction between our genes, exercise, nutrition, lifestyle choices, and our health. And to understand what all this means, we're going to be talking with Paul right now, all the way from Melbourne, Australia. So welcome, Paul.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure to be invited to speak and share the message. And it's a message of hope that our genes are not our destiny. And it's been exciting. It's exciting to meet you when you've come to Australia and to find your passion in this space as well, to be able to make a difference in people's health and well-being.
And I think I need to disclose the fact that I think it's about 2 years now where I have the opportunity to meet you, to become certified as a FitGenes practitioner, and have been really passionate about getting this message out. And I include a nutrigenomic program for my patients worldwide based on this important work. So it's just wonderful to have you here having this conversation, Paul, because you are such an inspiring teacher to me. And I just love the fact that we have these chats. I always learn so much from you. So thanks for being here today.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Pleasure.
So, Paul, maybe we should begin, because your story is so fascinating. We start at the beginning for your journey in nutrigenomics, because you have a PhD in engineering. What sort of engineering did you get your PhD
in? It was materials engineering. Materials, actually.
Materials engineering.
Materials engineering.
I have no clue what that is. But how did you get from your studies as a PhD in engineering all the way over to this world of nutrigenomics?
Well, it's been a fascinating journey. Sometimes it's not the journey in life that you choose. It was in 1978 when I was finishing my PhD in engineering, and we got the horrible news that my father, at the age of 52, had cancer and had only 3 months to live. And it was just an absolute shock. And he didn't want to die in a hospital. He wanted to die at home with his family. So I stopped my PhD. We had a very good family doctor, and we nursed him at home. And he actually lived for 18 months. But unfortunately, during that time, they couldn't give him enough heroin, cocaine, or morphine to kill the pain. So it was a very traumatic, emotional time for the family. And I was with him when he died. So it just was an absolute shock to have someone die so young. And then 8 years later, my wife gave birth to our daughter, and I cuddled my beautiful little daughter. I cuddled my wife. I got 5 minutes out of the delivery room, and my family doctor rang me and said, "Paul, I'm sorry to do this to you. Go to this other hospital 10 minutes away. Your mother's been admitted with a cancerous growth the size of a rock melon. She'll be dead in 3 months." So I had the biggest swing in emotions in 5 minutes. And what that made me realize is we're very good at keeping people alive. We're not good at keeping people healthy. And so I started trying to find out why. You know, why does this happen? Why is our medical system failing to improve our health? And in Australia right now, we are now talking more about a thing called health expectancy and not just life expectancy. Health expectancy is how long you will live without a disease, and life expectancy is obviously how long you live. Well, in Australia, health expectancy is actually declining, and the gap, and in Australia, men will spend the last 18.6 years of their life with a disability, and women 20.7, and one-third of that will be severe. So I started trying to figure out how can we improve our health expectancy. So as you mentioned just then, I started seeking the truth, and you know, I was trained to do research. I started talking to doctors, nutritionists, naturopaths, anyone I could find. And all over that period of study and research, I found all the roads kept leading back to our genes. And that is why the one-size-fits-all approach to health and well-being and medicine is failing. How many women, for example, can go on the same diet? Some will lose weight, some will put weight on. How many people go to the gym? Once people will lose weight, some will put it on. And it comes back to our genes determine our uniqueness. And so in 2006, I heard about this genetic profiling, and I flew to America, and with the last little bit of money we had, and I got a couple of genetic tests that were being made available to the public. But what I found was a book called It's Not Just Your Genes. It was written for the International Human Genome Study. And that's when I first heard about this genetic profiling, genetic nutrigenomics. So you cannot change the genes you get from your mum and your dad. God love them. That's what makes you the unique person you are, Cheryl. But you can compensate for the effects of any variations depending on the food that you eat, how you exercise, and lifestyle choices. Now, the only thing we're not talking about, the 1% to 2% of genes that are associated with diseases such as haemophilia and so forth. So it's a very empowering message that you have control over your destiny. Your genes are not your destiny. And it made me realize I did not have to finish up dying like my mother and my father from cancer. And it's been an exciting journey from that. And so we pioneered nutrigenomics, nutrigenetics, and I think the results speak for themselves, as you have fully seen.
So when you did your nutrigenomic testing, did you see those vulnerabilities that might have led you down the path to cancer?
Absolutely. And it's not that your genes are good or bad. It is just the way you were created. And it's What is happening is that our genes have not changed over since we're hunter-gatherers, but the environment that we live in has changed so dramatically that is impacting on our genes. It's what we call the gene-environment interaction. And so this is why we have the obesity epidemic. This is why we've got type 2 diabetes. This is why it's Alzheimer's. It's our genes variations that weren't impacted by environment even 100 years ago, and they're reacting. So when I looked at my profile, I could then look at all the things that happened to my father that put him at risk and my mother. For example, I've got potentially poor genes with the phase 1 and phase 2 detox and the natural antioxidant defense system. Now, what it means is my father smoked at one stage because of the stress of his job. I have that gene variation where I cannot afford to smoke, because if I do, it affects not only that gene but so many other genes that would increase my risk of cancer. Now, the fact that I know that, it means that I've got I've know my limitations. And my wife, Lee, who you've met, has a wonderful analogy that we've been given a gridiron field, in a playing field in life, and our genes determine the boundaries of that field. Now, for me, if I smoke, I'm out of the game. I'm in the stands. And But now that I know that, I don't need to. It made me show that what sort of foods I should eat, that if I eat more cruciferous vegetables such as broccoli, bok choy, cabbage, that favourably modifies the gene expression. And so I was able to then develop a personalised plan for me to minimise my risk of going down the path that my mum and my dad did. And I think that's why it was a blessing I was an engineer, that we look at what we call risk management programs. We identify a risk, we look at the likelihood, the consequences and exposure, and then we minimise them. And so the number of medical specialists have said that your approach is totally unique. And that's it, having that engineering systematic approach to our body. Because to me, it's simple. That our body is only as healthy as the basic building block of our body, which is our cell. So if we can protect the cell and get the gene sending out the right expression, then healthy cell, healthy tissue, healthy organ, healthy body, irrespective of what your health goal is.
So this is such leading edge information. It's leading edge testing, assessments, and I think we probably need to just define a little bit more what we mean when we say nutrigenomics, because that's still a term that most people do not understand, and I think it would be really helpful to give us a definition.
Well, there's actually two terms we need to look at. There's one called nutrigenetic, and there's the second term is nutrigenomic. Nutrigenetic is your genes determine how you respond to your environment, the food you eat, how you exercise. For example, some people, there's a gene called ACE, and that determines how much your arteries contract. And people have probably heard of ACE inhibitors. Now, what happens is if you have a variation in that gene, it means your arteries contract more than the average person. So the gene determines the physiological effect on the body. Now, that's a very handy gene to have if you're an Olympic athlete in the 100-yard sprint, maybe a hockey player, because it means you're a power-based athlete. But it is not a good thing if you're a stressed, overweight executive, because it means your risk of blood pressure can go up higher than the person without that variation. So the genes determine that response. Your genes determine how much dietary fat you'll absorb. If you have a variation, some people will absorb more dietary fat than the person without that variation. It determines the amount of dietary fat you store. It determines how you respond to a diet. For a lot of people, the worst diet they can go on is a low-fat diet, because invariably it's high in carbs and so forth. So the genes determine how your body responds. That's the nutrigenetics. But nutrigenomics is you can change the effect of the gene by the type of food you eat. And your genes are a bit like a dimmer switch. You can dial them up or dial them down. And for example, as you well know, the genes that control the amount of inflammation that we produce in our bodies, that switch can be dialed up by taking omega-3. So the nutrition talks to the gene and can switch it up. So nutrigenomics is basically food talking to your genes, whereas nutrigenetics is your genes determining how you respond to nutrition, exercise, stress, sleep, and so forth. So they're the two different terms.
And I think that it's so important to understand that food isn't just about getting those vitamins and those minerals. It's really about the information that is found in food, or
absolutely,
you know, information actually that comes from all the things that we do is communicating information to our genes. Everything
absolutely
is in a constant communication, right? Mm. We're having this talk, this conversation all the time, what we're doing, what we're thinking, what we're eating. Everything is impacting how our genes are responding, or our genomic potential of our genes.
Very interesting you say that. There is a landmark study that I saw a few years ago, and basically it said, why do we eat food? Now, if you speak to most people, they say we eat food for the macronutrient content, such as the carbohydrate, the protein, and the fat. Well, what this article concluded is that the nutritional component of food is of only secondary importance to the effect that the food has on the gene expression. And what they did is they took two groups of people that were trying to lose weight. They gave them exactly the same diet in macronutrient content. So if you looked at any diet, any protocols, they were identical. The only difference was they varied the type of carbohydrate. One was low GI, one was a little bit higher. And what they found at the end of the study, the people that were on one diet lost significant weight, and the people on the other diet put on significant weight. And when they went and analyzed it, they found the ones that lost weight, that the food, that diet favorably modified the gene expression of 68 genes that affect fat metabolism, whereas the ones on the other diet, it affected something like about 72 genes adversely that affect fat metabolism in adipose tissue. And so not all diets are the same, and that is why when two people have the same diet, it won't work. It's all about, as you quite rightly said, the message that the food sends to your genes and how your genes then respond. So it's opening up a whole new area of personalized health and wellness for helping people maximize their potential for healthy living and healthy aging, irrespective of whether they're an Olympic athlete, an executive that may have high blood pressure, a menopausal, premenopausal woman, as my wife says, was sick and tired of getting told, look, you'll get over it, don't worry about it, or people who have children that are diagnosed with on the spectrum. It's the same principles apply.
So this is such an important key piece right here, that we are talking about a way to understand what our unique gene expression requires for optimal health. It's personalized. You cannot, one size, let me just say this way, one size does not fit all. And that's a big problem that we're facing. We give people the same drugs, we give them the same diet, but it doesn't work that way in reality. It's all, it needs to be personalized based on our own unique profile, genomic profile.
Absolutely, absolutely. And this is what is so exciting. In the early days when we started, probably the biggest group of people that came to us were women in their maybe 38 to late 50s. And the reason being is women are more proactive about their health. This is in Australia, and I'm sure it's true in America and around the world. Women will actually spend money on their health. And then women then bring in the partners, the family. And the number of women that they found that the weight would just start creeping on as they were getting into their 30s, late 30s, and no matter what they did, they'd go on diets, they'd go to the gym, and for a lot of the women, the more they went to the gym, the fatter they got. And we started looking at it from a genetic point of view, and I researched for several months, and because my wife was in that situation, and she was getting angry and frustrated. And she's got degrees in physiology, psychology, she was a national athlete, and nothing was working. And we looked, and after I did my research, I said to Lee, women should get a Victoria Cross for surviving menopause. I don't know how they do it based on what happens with the genes. And what we found was that when the estrogen levels for the women start dropping, it sets a signal to all these genes that are associated with inflammation. And this inflammation then was ripping around the body. It then lodges in the fat cells and blocks the ability for the fat cell to dissolve. And then by the time the ladies would go to the gym, they're highly inflamed, and the worst thing they need is to get flogged by some personal trainer in the gym. Now, let me put a disclaimer. I'm not against going to the gym, but what I'm saying is by the time the women go there, they need to find ways to reduce the inflammation rather than exacerbate it by more exercise. Because when women get to that stage, the worst thing they need to do is to go and hit the exercise hard. They need active recovery and things like spas, saunas, just walking, hydration. And we found that genetically, the women having the tougher time had more of these gene variations with the inflammatory genes. And so it's been a really interesting journey. We call it the Fit Genes Back Off approach, where the less is more. And so we can personalize the program. Then once you can get that systemic inflammation down, then you can go back into the gym and do the exercise that is appropriate to your genetic profile. And again, for most of these women, the way for them to lose weight is not by doing aerobic exercise. It is by using the major muscle groups, 6 to 8 reps, major muscle groups to lose weight. So we've redefined the whole way of training, even with Olympic athletes, around this. We call it eliminate the guesswork. So that's one of our catchphrases.
And that's such a great insight into how we can be more effective, because if we just try to follow a system but it's not necessarily compatible with our genes, we're not going to get the outcome. In fact, it could create adverse responses. And I think you've got some great anecdotes. You were telling me that you've worked with some athletes who've used their nutrigenomic profile to help them improve their performance. Can you share some of those stories, okay, Paul?
Well, the first one we started with was back in 2007 and 2008 when we started this area. We were working with people in the exercise area, and we were working with a peak performance coach from Australian Olympic in the canoeing, and one of her clients was 500 metre kayaking. He was aiming for the Olympics, and he lived in Melbourne, and their training regime was 150 kilometres, and I'll let you convert that to miles, per week, rowing. And because he had a full-time job, he could only train at 4 o'clock in the morning on the Yarra. Now, I'm sure you've been to Melbourne in winter and you know that it can get down to like 0 degrees. So he'd be out there at 5 in the morning having to do 150 kilometres, 20 kilometres per day. He was breaking down, he was getting injuries, and he just couldn't build muscle mass. When his peak performance coach got the genetic profile, she cut his training down from about 150 kilometres down to about 50 kilometres per week. He cut it down by two-thirds to reduce the inflammation, and when she did, his performance went through the roof. And not only that, in the next month or two, he actually built 2 kilograms of muscle, because he had a gene variation where the more he trained, the more it destroyed the muscle. It's a thing called creatine kinase. He didn't get injuries, and his performance went through the roof. He didn't make the Olympics because we had a very strong group that year. We won the gold medal. We had 8 people who were incredible. And so the difference was phenomenal, and we've seen that across the board. And even recently, we've had a gentleman who was up near the Olympic level, but he could never quite get through that little barrier. He trains one of the top triathletes in the world, a female triathlete, lives in America, and he's very, very knowledgeable. But he was getting injuries, and he was running 120 miles a week, about 100 miles a week he would run. Again, the same problem, the inflammatory genes, and he backed off his training by 55%. His sleep improved, the injuries went away, and in a 5-kilometre run, he took 3 minutes off his best time ever. So that was just on the athletic side of it. We've seen that. We've seen the blood pressure, the cardiologists we're working with, weight loss. We've seen women that had, one lady had trouble getting pregnant, or maintaining the pregnancy. So there's case after case. So whichever way, I'm happy to talk about, as you know, about whatever cases you'd like me to.
Okay, we'll talk about more. But before we do that, when you mentioned that the reason that he was prone to injuries was because of these inflammatory genes, can you elaborate and explain so people can understand what that really is referring to?
Okay. Well, we have an immune system, and whenever we do an injury, such as we might hurt our ankle, it gets inflamed, and that's part of the healing process. So having acute inflammation is a good thing in helping our body repair. But the problem we have is when it turns into what we call a systemic and chronic inflammation, we finish up with inflammation in the joints and we finish up with arthritis. If we getting continual inflammation, this is what contributes to putting on weight. And they've now identified that inflammation and oxidative stress or free radical damage underpin every adverse health effect. So what we want to do is we want to have that inflammation to help repair the body, the acute, but you want that to then go away within the next day or two. But when it's there, you know, year after year after year, that's when it causes problems. And the problem we have in the world today of all the diseases, whether it be arthritis, Alzheimer's, even autism, cancer, they're all underpinned by this inflammation that is there, and it's the root cause. And so we have to get rid of that. And the problem we have today is we live in an obesogenic environment where all these factors are making us more prone to inflammation. So it means that the people that have the variations in these inflammatory genes are more susceptible to arthritis, cancer, Alzheimer's, and so forth. And that's why we have type 2 diabetes. So inflammation is the root cause. And I've heard someone sum it up as the fire within. So we've got to quench that fire.
So if you have these genomic indicators or markers, it means that we're more vulnerable to have inflammation occur and less effective at keeping it at bay and reducing it.
Absolutely. Well, we have two groups of genes. We have the genes that produce the inflammation, and then we have the other genes that get rid of the inflammation. So for me, I'm more susceptible to inflammation than the average person. And we find that that is also ethnic dependent. When I was in Malaysia and we were training the doctors over there, I was talking to our international medical director, and it was fascinating to see the different genetic profiles. There was the ones that had a lot of inflammation, and then there was the ones that had the, with the detox, phase one and phase two, had a lot of variations. Then the third group had a lot of variations in fat metabolism and heart health. And the fascinating thing was the first group was all the Europeans, such as myself. The second group was the Chinese that had the detox, and the third group was the Malays, the Indians. Now, the interesting thing is that the number one cause of death in China for Chinese is cancer, and the number one cause of death for the Indians is heart. And our genetic signature was showing that difference, which is really fascinating. And it's not a fait accompli that it means the Chinese will finish up with cancer or the Indians will finish up with heart. What it means is if you know that your profile, you can put in the interventions to stop that. Because the most important thing about what Fit Genes does is we only look at genes that affect the physiological functioning of the body at the cellular level. They have to be well-researched genes. They have to be more than 10% of any ethnic population. But more importantly, there have to be interventions in nutrition, exercise, or lifestyle that patient or that person can make the lifestyle changes to reduce the risk of going down that pathway. And I think that's the most important thing, is that you can do something about it. It's a message of hope. I did not have to finish up dying of cancer like my parents. And so that's one of the really important things about what we're doing. It's not about what drugs I should take or things like that. It's about what's the best lifestyle choices, nutrition, exercise choices I can make that I will improve my potential for healthy living and healthy aging.
And that healthy aging is just so important. As you were saying when we began the conversation, we can have extended lifespans, but we're not living it with health and vitality. Mm. We're really suffering and becoming more and more compromised with our health, and you know, the quality of life goes downhill if we don't get this kind of knowledge and apply the interventions that you were talking about. And I know that's true for me, too. When I did the Fit Genes test, I mean, it was quite a revelation as well. I have those vulnerabilities. I didn't come in with very effective ways to manage inflammation, oxidative stress, detoxification. I mean, I could have been And I was actually potentially set up to deal with the cardiovascular events that my father had, and both my mother and my father. My father died of pancreatic cancer. Mm. My mother's had cancer. She's had strokes and blood clots. And, you know, I just see that could have been my direction in life, even though I thought I was doing all the right things, right? But in actual fact, I learned that I wasn't targeting, I wasn't hitting the bullseye. I didn't have the knowledge. I did the best I could, but I wasn't taking the specific nutrients that would impact how well those genes would function or how I can compensate for what wasn't working well.
And I think the thing that you found, Cheryl, is the intervention is not hard once you know what they are. And that's the exciting thing. And I think the important point to get across as well is nutritionally something can be good for you, but to have a nutrigenomic effect, you may not be having the right dose. For example, we have a business development manager for a company, a multi-billion dollar company in Australia that has had women's health issues for 20 years. And it was inflammation, and so there's the women's issues, there's the fingers getting fat and so forth. She had a profile done and went to one of our practitioners who found out that it was these inflammatory genes and other ones. And by upping the amount of omega-3 to about 4 grams of EPA DHA a day, and it had a nutrigenomic effect, and she saw results within 2 weeks. And she was very angry that for 20 years she'd been taking the omegas, but at a much lower dose, which nutritionally may have been good for her, but it did not have a nutrigenomic effect. And the change she had was phenomenal. Now, you may not have to stay on that. You don't have to stay on that dose forever. It's just, let's get the gene switches back to the right position, back it off, and then get back and using diet and exercise. So it's a holistic approach. And the important thing is that we are not a genetic testing or genetic profiling company. We are a personalized genome-based healthcare company. It's a holistic, integrated one. And by having the information from your profile, it means you can make more targeted, personalized, and specific interventions that what your body needs, not anybody else. And that's the exciting thing about our personalized health and wellness programs that we run.
So can we talk about some of the ways we can apply this information? Let's talk about women's health. So what have you found when women do the genomic testing and have more of an understanding of what their genetic potential is revealing to them?
Well, one of the things we found is that for a lot of the women, and invariably it's getting towards the late 30s where the problems start. And it's been very empowering because a lot of the interventions they're using are actually having the opposite effect. And, for example, one of the things I found was with my research is that when women start getting into the late 30s, the estrogen level starts dropping. But the problem is when estrogen drops, it sends off signals to a lot of the other genes around inflammation, the ability to fight free radicals, the genes that control this thing called homocysteine, the genes that control how much the arteries contract, how much they expand. And what I found is when the estrogen drops, it negatively affects all the ones that are not good for you. The women get more the arteries contract more, it produces more inflammation, it doesn't produce as many natural antioxidants, and everyone's focused on the estrogen, but it's all these other knock-on effects. And we found that the women that had more variations in the inflammatory genes and the inability to fight the free radicals, and we found that they also get more constriction of the arteries. And when we start targeting the gene expression and putting the switches back into the right position, the women started losing the weight, and they would lose the weight from all over because it was that body-wide inflammation. They found they weren't getting hot flushes, their ability to concentrate, and I found the women that had more variations in those genes had a tougher time going through menopause. And we've had women that would lose 0.5 to 1 kilogram, or about 1 to 2 pounds a week, but would come from all over the body. And these are the results from our practitioners. Their mood's improved, and it just gives them more of a roadblock, a roadmap to be able to remove the blockages. So that's been very important. And the main thing we had with the women was to get them to back off with exercise and just not go to the gym and try every new program just walking 30 minutes a day and getting rid of that systemic inflammation, then they can go back and start exercising and more about resistance work, not aerobic. And you do aerobic exercise to improve your cardio capacity, but not to lose weight. So it right. gives a personalized roadmap.
Yeah, that's so important to understand what's driving hormonal imbalance. My big message to women when I lecture is that we have to understand the root cause issues behind hormonal imbalance, and that all hormonal imbalance is the result of these issues that are the root causes that are driving it. And it's not just about taking a hormone replacement. It's really understanding what our body is telling us so we can heal and repair. And looking at the genomic component gives us that very specific information that we can then act on successfully.
Absolutely.
Go ahead. You were going to say something, Paul?
No, I think just following on from that was, as I mentioned previously to you before we started recording this, we've had one of our doctors in New Zealand had a patient come with, he was asymptomatic high blood pressure with hypertension, and it was well controlled, and as part of wanting to stay healthy, his father died in his 50s of a coronary arterial disease, had the profile done, and his blood pressure was managed. All of his blood markers were what was considered pretty normal, and in New Zealand, his risk of a heart attack was only 5% on best practice in New Zealand. Now, when the doctor had the profile done, he said, I don't believe this. This profile is showing this potentially more at risk than he had the genes that produced inflammation. He had the genes that couldn't fight the free radicals. His arteries contracted more than the average person. And so they did the American Framingham standard, which is the gold standard in heart health, and they said maximum 8% risk of a heart attack. And they don't even look at any intervention above unless it's 15. And the doctor still didn't refuse to – he refused to accept that. He then got what they call a CT calcium score to look at the hardening of the arteries in the heart. When they got the result back, his risk of a heart attack was 99%, and it was the highest score they've ever had in CT calcium. And he would be dead today if that doctor hadn't persisted looking at the information that the profile showed.
And then what did he have to do, Paul, to reverse that risk?
Well, what he's doing now is he's putting in place the interventions, the nutrigenomic interventions, and he's now working with a cardiologist. It's like how do you eat an elephant one bite at a time? And the elephant is high blood pressure. And what our profile shows, what are the drivers behind that? And for this person, he was prone to too much inflammation. He didn't have the ability to get rid of the inflammation. And he was more susceptible to damage in the arterial walls and the thin lining, the endothelium. And so by knowing that, he can take the nutrition and nutrigenomic interventions to get the genes controlling, driving those areas to be functioning more appropriately. So that's the program that he's on now. And we have, as I mentioned, one of the doctors, the cardiologist in America, is no longer using statin drugs. He's now using the interventions based on the profile, the fit genes profile.
And I think it's so important to emphasize that the patient you were talking about, that gentleman, did the traditional test, nothing showed a problem, but when he did the genomic report, it definitely showed these genes that he inherited increased, you know, he was vulnerable. He had some risk factors, and fortunately the doctor pursued it and found the right test that could give the true feedback of what was going on with him.
Absolutely, and it's not like that you've got these gene variations, oh, I'm going to finish up with hypertension. No, it means that the qualified practitioner can put the relevant interventions in place. And it's, for example, there are 15 medically proven risk factors for heart disease, and every one of those, 100% clinical correlation, is with C-reactive protein, this measure of inflammation. And the exciting thing is that we can do something about it. And it's not, people don't have a heart attack because they've done one thing, one of those risk factors, 100% wrong. They have a heart attack because six of those risk factors, they're 20%. Negligent, and you don't notice those small parts, but then they just add up, and there is this compounding, multiplying effect. And that's how people say, how did I have a heart attack? And they're looking for the big factor whereas it's a combination of these little factors and it can be exacerbated by our genes. But that's also the good thing is if you can identify what are the potential risk factors and make a 20% change in those risk factors, you have this exponential increase in improving your cardiovascular health and reducing your risk.
So interesting. Let's talk about the detoxification pathways and the genes that influence the enzymes that help with what we call phase one, phase two, taking fat-soluble toxins and turning them into the more benign water-soluble forms to be excreted safely out of the body. Can you talk a little bit about what the Fit Genes nutrigenomic test is revealing about how well we manage phase one and phase two and the risks?
Well, I think the most important thing, too, is we look at cell defense, and it's also need to look at the antioxidant defense system as well. So that's critical, that do we have the ability to fight the free radicals? So what detoxification is, there's two phases. Phase one is we take the toxins and what's called xenobiotics and convert them into the fat soluble. So that is phase one. Then when they turn them into fat soluble, they're also free radicals. Now, you don't want those free radicals to stay there. You have to get those out of the body as soon as possible. And that's where phase two kicks in, where it takes those intermediate reactive species and turns them into the water soluble to be excreted out of the body. Now, the problem can occur if your phase one is overactive because you're producing the intermediate free radicals can be more damaging than what you start with. Then you need to have if the phase two is too slow, you can't get that out. So you've got to get, it's all about balance. And that's critical, is to get them out of the body as quick as you can and then have the natural antioxidant defense system to be able to fight any free radicals. And that depends on what you eat and the type of genes you've got. For example, I've got an overactive phase one and an underactive phase two, but by taking a product called sulforaphane, that can slow down phase one and speed up phase two and get back into balance. So I'm very conscious of the vegetables I eat now. I eat broccoli, bok choy, and anything in the cruciferous vegetable range because I know that that helps my detoxification process. And I've just turned 60 last year. I'm feeling fantastic. And I'm not a health nut. I just know what is relevant to my body and what it needs.
Which is the whole point of what we're doing, you know, how we can really optimize our ability to function, to process, to detoxify. And if we just want to take that further, let's talk about some of the other practical applications of this work, particularly we've discussed some of the fantastic reports we've had from people who, or parents who've had autistic children, some of the improvements that they've noticed when they've applied the information they receive from the nutrigenomic panels.
Yes, as I said, we can work with people from the whole health spectrum because we look at the drivers to keep their cells healthy. Now, one of our practitioners that was part of our autism initiative, this was a federal government grant that we got from the government, Dr. Heather Way, who's got a PhD. She was the early person starting with us. She has two children on the spectrum, one with Asperger's and one low-functioning end. And by looking at the profile, what we found was that these children are very, very susceptible to inflammation and also that they had faulty, what we call vitamin D receptors. And so what Dr. Way found was that the response with her children in 12 weeks was remarkable because what happened is the mothers invariably before pregnancy were more inflamed, and then when the baby was in the mother's womb, they were more susceptible to neuroinflammation. And so what we found is these children had more of those gene variations. But by being able to put the interventions in, and that again goes back to the expertise that Heather's gained by not only having two children herself, but having treated so many since there, was it gave her a roadmap to identify where the problems were. And the children were very susceptible with gut issues. And what she found was by getting the vitamin D, I was able to help settle down the gut by getting the inflammation genes under control, and her children now are back in normal schools. So it's been remarkable, you know, results. And she's worked with hundreds of children. Now, this is a very emotional area because I've seen a lot of the parents, and that's the expertise that she's gained. And so it's been wonderful to see those results. And again, this is personalised health, and the spectrum is quite broad. So it's not a silver bullet. It's not a one-size-fits-all, but it just identifies where these children are more susceptible to the environment that we as parents are making them live under.
You know, I want to just mention, I've had the opportunity to do genomic testing on three generations in a family, and I'd like your thoughts on this, Paul. So what I have noticed is that each generation, so the grandparents, the parents, and the children, and every time that I've looked at this generation progression, each generation has more vulnerabilities. There are more of these genomic influences show up, more compromised abilities to manage inflammation, oxidative stress, detoxification with each succeeding generation. So by the time these kids are tested, they've inherited genes because of what their parents were exposed to that make them even more compromised. And it's like these kids were never really designed to be living in the 21st century. It's really hard to be healthy without the interventions put in place.
You're exactly right, because as part of this program, I think all up now there's been 400 people. That includes the grandparents, the parents, the children diagnosed on the spectrum and either end, and it also brings in the siblings. And what we've seen is exactly what you said. There's this slow progression down, and the children are more susceptible. But the exciting thing is, once we know the areas they're susceptible, you can put in interventions to then flick the switches into the right position. And there's a very good statement someone's made in America that these children are the canary in the coal mine. They're indicating the vulnerability of future generations to going down the same pathway. And I just get so excited when I see the parents where their children are now talking and being, you know, remarkable. And we actually have the scientific data to show the improvements in these children with the behavioural psychological evaluations, pathology markers, and we're looking to get that written up in scientific papers. So you're exactly right. You can just see the slow progression down, and the kids weren't made to get sick or to have autism. It's just they're responding to the environment that they have to live in now. So what we do is once we know the profile, then you can change the environment to help make sure that their genes are optimizing at the best possible level.
And the important thing to emphasize is that this is a test that you only do once in a lifetime. So you don't have to keep reviewing it and, you know, redoing it. You just do it once. You get the information. And I love when young children are tested. So I've done children as young as 8 months of age, and you can see what their, I call them their Achilles heels are, their vulnerabilities based on their genomic profile. And therefore, the parents can be so proactive with nutrition and with supplementation for this child's entire life. They can set them off on the right path from the very beginning.
Absolutely. We have one of our partners in Hong Kong wants a one profile aimed at the children because, as you know, one of the genes in our profile is the FTO gene, and it's one of the most accurate predictors of the risk of type 2 diabetes and obesity. Now, that is the children, especially children at the age of about 8, and again, the girls about 13, if they are inactive, they are more prone to putting on the weight and becoming obese. So as a parent, if you have an idea of, you have that information, you can make sure that they're eating the right foods, because children with this variation are the ones that will go for the carbohydrates and all the bad foods without realizing why they do it. So if the parents know that, they can make sure that if they go out, they don't, and to a buffet, that the children eat the healthy foods, because naturally they'll want to eat the junk food. So I think it's very empowering from that point of view, being able to help the children establish the habits based on the child's genetic profile, not the one-size-fits-all model.
Well, interesting, huh? So in the few minutes we have left, is there anything else that you want to cover in this conversation today, Paul?
Well, I think the most important thing is it's a message of hope. And just some of the phrases we've got is, your genes are not your destiny. I did not have to finish up dying of cancer like my parents. There is something I can do about it. It's very empowering because for many, many years, when you talked about genetic testing, people go, oh, it's associated with disease. When we talk about genetic profiling, it identifies the nutrigenetic, the genes, and then how your body will respond to the food you eat, how you exercise. So I think that fear factor is going, and as is a message of hope that there are things that I can do. And the same for anyone that's listening to this. There are things you can do to maximize your potential for healthy living and healthy aging, irrespective of your health goal. It might be you want to run in a marathon. God love you if you want to do that. That's not me, because genetically I'm not built for that. But we can show you how, by having a profile, that how to train, what's most appropriate. It might be that you're reducing your risk of high blood pressure. It might be just healthy aging. I do not want to finish up with Alzheimer's like my mother-in-law. So it doesn't matter what the health goal is. It is getting the drivers that control good health, get them operating properly for you. So it's all about personalized health, eliminating the guesswork, and helping you maximize your potential for healthy living and healthy aging.
You know, we really are at the leading edge, but are your thoughts that this nutrigenomic testing will become standard testing for people in the future, so the medical profession can begin to personalize nutrition, or at least the integrative health profession, or those more progressively minded, will be able to help their patients direct their course in life?
Absolutely. And that's why we have medical specialists flying in from America to be trained by us, cardiologists, people with working in the area of autism. It's only a matter of time because our health systems are going bankrupt. I think the World Health Organization has stated by 2030, every Western health system will be bankrupt unless there's something major happens now. We're doing research. We're doing research in a retirement village in Alzheimer's, or how to prevent it. So we've got a lot of research projects going, but being a small company, we don't have the resources like, say, the pharmaceuticals. But it's only a matter of time that the research will come out and will prove. We call it translational research. So what we're doing is we're taking the complex science of nutrigenetics and nutrigenomics and translating it into simple, practical, everyday interventions which get results. So as soon as you've got the results, then everyone will then believe it. We are getting them. It just takes time. So it's only a matter of it's only a matter of when. Personalized healthcare and using nutrigenetic profiling or genetic profiling is here, and we're on the tipping point right now. So it's an exciting future ahead.
It's exciting, very exciting. And, you know, one more thing I just want to ask you, because so many people have asked me about this. What has become really popular is the testing called 23andMe. And I know you know about it, and it's gotten a lot of publicity. A lot of people are doing it, but I think we need to say how 23andMe is different from what we're doing with the Fit Genes testing.
Okay, 23andMe is about gaining information, and I know that right now the FDA is limited talking about interventions. And so what happens is you finish up with a big data file of letters, A, C, T, and G. But what we're about is about giving the interventions and empowering the practitioners. So Fit Genes only works through certified practitioners that we have trained. We don't go direct to the public. And it's about empowering the practitioner. We have proprietary software, as you know, which is called Prackware, which holds all the database. So we are evidence-based. We have all of the research to back up everything that we say about what the genes do, the physiological functioning, the clinical relevance, the interventions. And it's about helping people, practitioners such as yourself, help the patient make better choices about what they eat, exercise, and lifestyle. So what we have is we have the interventions. It's a whole personalized genome-based healthcare program, not just a genetic test to give some information. And the problem is, I see a lot of people on the internet doing Dr. Google, trying to self-diagnose themselves. They'll say, I've got this gene, the MTHFR gene. Oh, my God. No, that's only, you can't look at any one gene in isolation or some gene. So knowledge can be very dangerous if you start looking at genetic profiling. For example, you can get in the gene is the BRCA gene. Well, you need to be working through a practitioner that understands all the implications of the BRCA gene and breast cancer if you're going to look at those genes associated with diseases. But our approach is to focus on genes associated with healthy living, healthy aging, and giving the practitioner the tools to be able to help the patient make the most appropriate nutrition, exercise, and lifestyle choices for that patient, not for anyone else.
Because when you do the 23andMe, and many people have come to me saying, look, can you just consult me? I've done this test and just review it with me. And I look at that test and I tell them, I am sorry. I can't even make sense of this test. There's so much data thrown at you, but it's like, you know, so much of it is irrelevant to really impacting your health. So, you know, I just advise people not to do this test because it's not going to give them anything really useful that they can apply.
Well, more genes are not better. It is how do they affect the functioning of the body? And see, we've had to work smart. We don't have the $50 million. We don't have a lot of money. So we've worked smart, and we look at the biochemical pathway, and we try to get upstream, what we call upstream, to find out what are the master controllers that influence inflammation, vitamin D metabolism, heart health, and detox. And so we're very strategic and targeted because there is one gene, the name's NRF2 for scientific terms, it controls over 200 genes that control detox. Now, if you can start looking at those genes and start working with those genes, they're very, very powerful effect on the functioning of the body. So we design our profiles with very specific goals in mind, rather than just do more is not necessarily better if you don't know what they do.
And that's such an important point that, you know, if you're not really targeting the things that are going to create the greatest results, why bother?
If you can't see, the problem in the early days is people would get a genetic test done and they say, you've got this gene. And my question is, well, what do I do about it? Well, we don't know. And that's why FitGenes will not have any gene in any of our profiles unless there is a intervention in nutrition, exercise, and lifestyle to empower the patient to improve their health and well-being. And it's a message of hope, not a fear and doom and gloom.
And I just think that is such a huge point there, that what FitGenes is doing is giving you a look at what you've inherited and what are some of the issues that you need to be aware of and mindful of, and then offer the interventions, the practical ways to improve the functioning of your cells, support your physiology so you can have greater health and optimized functioning. And that is the whole point of why we're doing this.
And I think that's what separates us, is our focus, our philosophy of what we've done. And I think that being an engineer actually helped me develop the systems and look at the body as a system and develop the programs that we have.
I'd like to thank Paul Beaver for being with us today all the way from Australia. He is the founder of FitGenes, one of the leading companies working with nutrigenomic testing. And thank you for joining me. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman. Until next week, remember to always honor the wisdom of your feminine self. Bye for now.